As you said, my name is Cody Herning, and I work on a team of researchers that works on implementing winter annual cover crops in the corn and soybean rotations. My specific research looks at the pest dynamics of soybean cyst nematode populations in this system. I just want to start with the annual cover crop survey report. We saw from this report that the two dominant species planted last year were winter rye and radish. Overall, there has been limited adoption of cover crops across the United States, especially in corn and soybean rotations. It continues to be profitability and risk concerns by growers about implementing cover crops into their rotations. Those who did implement cover crops observed soil benefits, including improved soil health, increased organic matter, and reduced erosion. This is time series data of NDVI taken from space looking at the vegetation in the Midwest. The green correlates with growing healthy vegetation. The browns and tans correlates with exposed bare soil. You can see that in the spring till about June 15th in our annual row cropping systems, especially in Minnesota and Illinois, you can see that there's exposed soil prior to the planting of the corn and soybeans. As the summer goes on, you can see the vegetation covers these regions. And then in fall, starting about September 15th, when you see natural senescence and harvest beginning, you see the return of this exposed soil. The annual grain cropping system has missed opportunities for biomass production. This is in the spring prior to plant and in the fall after harvest. The dominant cover crop species used, like tillage radish, only cover the soil in the fall after harvest, and they winter kill, providing no cover in the spring. The spring is especially important because that is when we receive a lot of rainfall, making the system vulnerable to nitrate leaching, erosion, and runoff. The winter rye covers the soil in both the fall and the spring, but does not address profitability concerns by growers. The winter annual cover crop system is unique in that it provides cover in both the fall and the spring, and also provides a marketable seed product for the system. The goal of the winter annual cover crop system is to increase adoption through economic incentive. The winter annual cover crops provide that marketable seed product, adding another source of income to the corn and soybean rotation. This increases the overall production and profit of the system. Pennycress and camelina are the two target crops for this system. They're members of the Brassicaceae family. They're cold-tolerant winter annuals, good for upper Midwest. They reach rapid seed maturity in the spring, and of course they have this economic opportunity component. Both pennycress has been investigated for use in bio-based products as well as biodiesel. Camelina has been investigated for uses as food-grade oil and biodiesel. So how does this system work? You plant the oilseed cover crops in the corn while the corn is growing. The corn is harvested at its normal date above the cover crop. Cover crop stays in its rosette period over winter. It then begins to bolt to maturity in the spring. The soybeans are no-till planted into the cover crops at 30-inch rows. The cover crop and soybeans exist in the system together for 4 to 5 weeks. At that point, the cover crop reaches maturity and is harvested above the soybeans. The soybeans then grow to maturity and are harvested. So you see on 5 and 6 that there are two marketable seed products that are taken from the system. You can see from the system that for most of the year there is living cover on the surface, protecting the soil. Adding a new crop into the system increases risk. This increases the risk of pest pressure, disease pressure, and nutrient availability for the cash cover crop. As many of you know, soybean cyst nematode is a major pest in soybean. And in the winter annuals, pennycress and camelina, there has been research on whether or not soybean cyst nematode is a host. Pennycress has been shown in previous research to be a host of soybean cyst nematode. Camelina has been shown to be a poor host. Soybean cyst nematode is widespread, causing about $1 billion of yield loss annually in the United States. It is not only a problem for susceptible soybean cultivars, it is also a problem for resistant cultivars, as high population densities, approximately 10,000 eggs per 100 cubic centimeters of soil, cause yield loss even in the resistant cultivars. Soybean growers are well aware of the yield effects of soybean cyst nematode and have active management plans in their farming operations. So the life cycle of soybean cyst nematode starts as a cyst in the spring. The egg is released from the cyst. The juvenile, female juvenile, then penetrates the root, develops, is fertilized by the male, forms a cyst, releases an egg matrix, and then dies, releasing the cyst from the plant root. And this is the overwintering body, and the cycle begins again. So why are we concerned about an alternate host in this system? As you can see by this graphic, there's a host in the system for a longer period of time, almost the whole year, except in winter. As the soybean cyst nematode releases from the cyst, we have the pennycress available for infection, if it is indeed a host. This would allow the population cycle to go through multiple times before the soybean enters the system and is planted. In the fall, after the soybean is harvested and there is no longer soybean tissue that can be infected, the pennycress is still there and can be infected by the soybean cyst nematode juveniles, and multiple reproduction cycles may go through, increasing the population for the soybean crop the following year. So what are our experimental goals? We want to determine host susceptibility of the winter-type pennycress and camelina lines to soybean cyst nematode. We also want to determine the pathogenicity of soybean cyst nematode to pennycress and camelina. So our experimental design, it was a factorial design with 7 cropping treatments, 3 winter-type camelina lines, 3 winter-type pennycress lines, and a susceptible soybean cultivar. There were 3 SCN races, race 1, 3, and 14, and 2 inoculation levels, 2,000 and 20,000 eggs per 100 cubic centimeters of soil. Moving to the timeline, remember these are winter-type crops, so they require a vernalization period. So we started with growing them in the greenhouse for 3 weeks. You can see them in cones here. We then moved them to the cold chamber under short light conditions at 5 degrees Celsius for 4 weeks. This allowed them to receive their cold treatment and vernalization, in which they do not bolt to maturity without that. We then moved them back to the greenhouse. We inoculated the soil in the pots, transplanted the oil seeds, 4 per pot, given their different treatments. And we also planted the soybean from seed at this time, because that does not require the vernalization. After 60 days, we ended the experiment, collected the soil, ran it for analysis, counting eggs of soybean cyst nematode, and then also took the biomass above ground of the pots, dried it, and it was weighed. Here are our testable hypotheses. First one, there will be no difference in reproduction between the 3 races of soybean cyst nematode. The pennycress will facilitate greater SCN reproduction than the camelina lines, and the pennycress will exhibit lower SCN reproduction than the susceptible soybean line, sturdy. So our first hypothesis, what was the effect of race on egg count? You see race was significant at the 0.05 significance level. We used mean separation, and I want to orient you in this figure. The response variable here is eggs per 100 cubic centimeters of soil on the y-axis. There are 2 inoculation levels. The orange is 2,000. The blue is 20,000. And this will be, there will be multiple figures, and it will all be in the same layout. So you see at the 2,000 inoculation level, there was no difference between the races in reproduction. At the 20,000 inoculation level, race 1 had greater reproduction than race 14. We also had a 3-way interaction that was significant. Again, we treated this with a LSG mean separation. You can see, instead of the races, the cropping treatments are listed here. We decide to slice by race to investigate this three-way interaction. You can see, denoted by the C's, that camelina had poor or non-host susceptibility in our experiment, with means very close to zero or zero. See that pennycress had host susceptibility, and that reproduction occurred on the pennycress roots, but this was generally lower than the susceptible soybean variety at both inoculation levels. For race 3, see a similar pattern. The camelina showed poor or non-host susceptibility. At the 2,000 inoculation level, you can see that there was no difference between the susceptible soybean lines and the three pennycress varieties. At the 20,000 inoculation level, you can see that reproduction did occur on the pennycress lines, but that it was lower than the susceptible soybean. Race 14, very similar story. Poor non-host susceptibility for all three camelina lines. There was host susceptibility for the pennycress lines, although they were lower than the susceptible soybean cultivar on the average for both 2,000 and the 20,000 inoculation levels. This is what we expect to see. The susceptible soybean is susceptible to all three races. We knew that going in, and there was high reproduction on the susceptible soybean line. We did not see any difference between the three pennycress lines at any of the races. And this is likely because there's not a lot of genetic variance in this population. They were all collected in Minnesota, these winter type lines in a region in Minnesota, the southern part. So what are our conclusions? The pennycress lines were host to all the races of soybean cyst nematode tested. The camelina lines were poor or non-host to the races of soybean cyst nematode tested, and we were not able to draw conclusions about pathogenicity. As to draw conclusions about pathogenicity, you need to see a lower biomass on the infected plants at the higher inoculation levels, and we did not see that interaction. So what are our future directions? First, we're going to repeat the experiment this year using the same experimental design, see if we get the same results. We want to evaluate host resistance of our pennycress lines. We have about 120 pennycress lines in our UMN breeding program, both spring and winter types, and we want to see if there's any host resistance to soybean cyst nematode within these lines. We also want to evaluate temperature effects. It is possible that it is too cold during the periods that the pennycress is in the field to actually have SEN reproduction occur. There's an optimal temperature for SEN reproduction that's usually around 80 degrees. We also are going to develop management recommendations to reduce SCN losses if someone would adopt this system. And with that, I want to acknowledge the pennycress and camelina research team, as well as my sponsors, the University of Minnesota, the Forever Green Initiative, and the Minnesota Soybean Research and Pinolation Council. I will take any questions that you have. Yes.
I don't know much about pennycress, but why do you select pennycress to be a good host for nematode? Is that because you want to draw the nematode towards that cover crop, or you want it to be away from?
We want it to be away from the cover crop, correct. So the question was, why are we investigating this pennycress as a host of soybean cyst nematode? So we're looking at implementing it in that system, and so if it was a host, it would then it would affect the yield of the soybean in the system, because soybean is what we're trying to protect. So it would have greater population cycling. Yes?
How successful has this relay cropping system that you're testing been?
That will probably be, there's other presentations on that. The question was, how successful has the relay cropping been? We have seen some success, actually. I do have a supplemental figure here. So you can see this was some actual data taken. So you can see on the right-hand side where the arrow is pointing at. This was grown, this is the relay with the soybean cropping. You can see the yield was actually higher when the two were combined than just the monocrop soybean. So it has been successful. This was a replicated study actually done by gash that out. So, yes. Yeah, so we are looking at all, the question was, is there a potential for other risks with wet springs, agronomic risks of that nature? And yes, there are. We are testing out all timings of planting these oilseeds to see when the latest they can be planted and the latest that soybeans can be planted and still have a net positive yield effect. So we are testing that currently.
So we're spilling now into our break. If you have some additional questions for the speaker, I'm sure he'd be happy to answer them on a one-on-one basis. But right now we have a 15-minute break. You can come back here at 10:05.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.